Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Al Jazeera journalists mark 1 year in an Egyptian prison. Cameroon planes attacked a Boko Haram position. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Three Al Jazeera journalists are marking 1 year since they were arrested in Egypt on charges of supporting the banned Muslim Brotherhood. They are scheduled to go to court on Thursday to appeal their case. Australian Peter Grest and Egyptian-Canadian Mohamed Fahmy are in prison on 7-year sentences, while their Egyptian colleague, Bar Mohamed, is serving a 10-year sentence. Al Jazeera insists its workers were simply doing their jobs, reporting the news, and that the news agency called the verdict against them shocking. The AFP reports a Cameroonian government announcement that its planes have attacked Boko Haram outposts in the north of the country. The airstrikes on Sunday were the first since the Islamist militants took over a militant camp in Asekhazia. The attack was ordered by Cameroon's president. The rebels are said to have fled the camp. Tunisia's new president-elect, El Baji Kaid El Sebsi, will be sworn into office Wednesday in a ceremony before parliament. The 88-year-old leader is the head of an anti-Islamist party. Former Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade's son Karim has been denied bail. AFP reports he is accused of gaining a fortune through corruption while he served as a government minister. Karim Wade has been in custody in Dakar since 2013. Reuters reports Libya has seen a drop in its output of oil. The fall came after oil tanks were set ablaze at a major terminal. This is VOA News. The Associated Press reports that Liberian officials are saying dozens of new Ebola cases have sprung up along the border with Sierra Leone. The announcement is seen as a setback for the government, which had seen the number of Ebola cases level off. Reuters reports that the number of Ebola cases in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea, the three hardest-hit African countries, has passed 20,000. The World Health Organization says more than 7,800 people have died so far in the Ebola epidemic. The head of Indonesia's search and rescue agency says the missing Asia Air jet is likely on the bottom of the sea. Bongbong Sistayo told reporters in Jakarta today the Airbus 320 with 162 people on board is presumed to have crashed Sunday off the Indonesia coast in the Java Sea. Italy says all of the remaining passengers have been rescued from a ferry boat that caught fire off the island of Corfu in the Adriatic Sea. That leaves the death toll at 8, with 3 more bodies found on the vessel after rescue workers hoisted the last survivors to safety. Nick Channing Williams is a British passenger.
We got out on deck. It was the flames were huge, and a lot of the cars were on fire, and it was actually just very scary, to be honest. And then there was only one place you could stand, which was in the rain.
Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi says only the captain of the Greek ferry and a handful of crew members remained aboard the Norman Atlantic, which authorities prepared to tow it to port. He praised the efforts of the rescue workers. Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras has called for early elections on January 25th after lawmakers today failed to elect a new president in the third and final round of voting. In a televised speech announcing the election date, Samaras also said Greece does not have time to lose and called on the public to support him in the upcoming election. U.S. President Barack Obama says a nuclear agreement with Iran is possible and would be a necessary first step in any greater diplomatic engagement between the two countries. In an interview with the National Public Radio Network, Mr. Obama said he would be hopeful about working to improve relations under a scenario with Iran that has a verified peaceful nuclear program. Ukraine's president signed a bill today renouncing his country's non-aligned status, but indicating that he will hold a referendum before seeking NATO membership. Briefly looking at markets, on Wall Street, U.S. stock indexes opened up today. European markets were mixed, and Asia-Pacific stock markets closed mixed today. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Cameroon says its military has been launching rockets on at least 1,000 suspected Boko Haram fighters who attacked its base on the border near Amchide and seized a huge portion of the town of Ashigashia, one of at least a half dozen villages now partially under the Nigerian militants' control. The government says Boko Haram has also taken a number of young girls since Friday for forced marriages to its fighters.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details coming up. Also in the news, officials report dozens of new Ebola cases have erupted along the border with Sierra Leone. And a senior Al-Shabaab member has surrendered to government and African Union troops in Gedo, Somalia. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Rwanda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour: Cameroon says its military has been launching rockets on at least 1,000 suspected Boko Haram fighters who attacked its base on the border near Amchide and seized a huge portion of the town of Ashigashi, one of at least a half a dozen villages now partially under the Nigerian militants' control. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, the government says Boko Haram has also taken a number of young girls since Friday for forced marriages to its fighters.
Cameroon military spokesman Colonel Dide Bajek says about 1,000 suspected Boko Haram fighters have seized parts of the villages of Gouma, Sangmi, Adebe, Mbalijuel, Dambore, Swarem and Ashigashia and briefly occupied a military camp on Sunday. He also announced that they have kidnapped young women.
En début de semaine, nos services de renseignement mettent la main sur des informations concordantes.
He says the military was informed by local residents that Boko Haram had taken girls between the ages of 12 and 15 and performed forced marriages and obtained Hausa language documents announcing the weddings. Boko Haram in the last year has stepped up kidnappings of young women in Nigeria to sell them into sexual slavery or force them to marry its fighters. The tactic has drawn international outrage, but Nigerian efforts to prevent more kidnappings or rescue the young girls have not been successful. Now, the practice is spreading in Cameroon, where Boko Haram has been using border towns as staging grounds and a source of supplies. The latest suspected Boko Haram attacks here in the past 3 weeks appeared to be aimed at pressing for the release of at least 100 of the group's fighters who were arrested after they seized some Cameroonian villages. Cameroon Minister of Communication Issa Chiruma Bakari says the Air Force has been bombarding insurgents' positions and has beaten them back from the military base near Amchide.
Cameroon will never accept that its territory be used as a support operating base for destabilization against other states. The crisis and tensions plaguing the region have, however, not failed to have repercussions in our country, in which the government is relentlessly working to limit it.
Thousands of people have been killed and hundreds of thousands displaced in Nigeria by Boko Haram's five-year-old uprising to create an Islamic state in Nigeria. Hundreds of thousands of Nigerians have taken refuge in Cameroon, but appear no safer here than at home. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's been a year since a small boy died of Ebola in a remote part of southeastern Guinea. Scientists say he was the first known case of the ongoing regional epidemic. Guinea has since reported nearly 2,600 cases, but it's the country's neighbors, Sierra Leone and Liberia, that have been the hardest hit. Sierra Leone started a new push against the virus in mid-December. VOA's Anne Look checks in on those efforts.
Sierra Leone is concentrating its efforts in the north and west of the country. The government prohibited public gatherings at Christmas. The northern district of Port Loko marked the holiday by declaring a lockdown as health workers went door to door. Health Ministry spokesman Sidi Y. Tunis says that's ongoing.
It is just a restriction of movement of people so that they'll be able to reach out to people to actually sensitize and educate them more and to be able to bring out sick people within households and communities. That is actually still going on. In the process, though, they're not allowing vehicles to enter the city or to leave the district because they do not want disruptions in their activities.
The World Health Organization says transmission remains, quote, most intense in the West, including the capital, Freetown. Cases began spiking there in November. There weren't enough Ebola treatment units, and the sick were staying home. Sierra Leone launched a massive surge operation in the West on December 17th. That included house-to-house searches and ramped-up education. The country was by that time armed with five new Ebola treatment units in the West, says Tunis. Its fleet of ambulances had tripled from 16 to 49, and there were 10 working labs, five in the West alone. But they needed to find the sick, and for that, Tunis said they needed to get communities involved. Enter the surge.
It is a community-led activity. We actually let the communities themselves come up with their social mobilizers, their contact tracers, and for them to also be part of the surveillance teams. So the local authorities are leading the process.
Through the West Nile surge, people are beginning to get confidence in the health system again, and people are actually self-reporting themselves.
It will be weeks before Sierra Leone can judge the full impact of these new efforts. However, the World Health Organization says the increase in cases does appear to be slowing. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
In other related news, Liberian health officials report dozens of new Ebola cases have erupted along the border with Sierra Leone. Assistant Health Minister Tolbert Nyansiwa says the discovery of new cases in forest areas is a setback. The number of infected Liberians had stabilized with a reported 8,000 cases in 9 months, but Sierra Leone's numbers have already reached more than 9,400. Health officials have had difficulty persuading rural populations to stop certain cultural practices that spread the virus, such as washing the bodies of the dead. WHO now estimates more than 20,000 people in four Western African countries have been infected. Of those, more than 7,800 have died. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved a rapid test for the Ebola virus. The Swiss drug maker Roche said their light mix Ebola Zaire test can identify the virus in patients in less than 4 hours. Older tests have taken days. Other drug makers are waiting for approval of other rapid tests. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab is downplaying the surrender and arrest of who's been described as a senior member of the militant group. Somali intelligence officials report that Zakaria Ahmed Hersi surrendered to government and African Union troops Saturday in Gedo. That's on the border with Kenya and Ethiopia. The U.S. State Department had offered a $3 million bounty for his capture. Hersi was considered close to ex-leader Ahmed Abdi Godane, who was killed in a U.S. airstrike 4 months ago. However, a spokesman for Al-Shabaab told the French news agency that Hersi left the organization a year ago and has no worthwhile intelligence to offer the government in its 6-year war with Al-Shabaab. You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington. Fifteen past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A senior Al-Shabaab member has surrendered to government and African Union troops in Gedo, Somalia. Cameroon says Boko Haram has taken a number of young girls from its border villages for forced marriages to its fighters. And officials report dozens of new Ebola cases have erupted along the border with Sierra Leone. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. Hundreds of displaced Muslims trapped in a town in the Central African Republic are becoming more vulnerable by the day, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR. The agency is calling for this group of people to be relocated. Discussions with the CAR government are expected in the coming days. VOA's Nick Long has the report.
About 500 Muslims, mainly ethnic Pearls, have been in the town of Yaloke in western CAR since fleeing there 9 months ago to escape hostile Christian and animist anti-Balaka militia. In Yaloke, they have had some protection from French and United Nations peacekeepers and have been receiving some food aid. But they are trapped in a small area and unable to move outside it for fear of attacks. Health conditions have deteriorated. A mission led by the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Bangui recently visited Yaloke to provide medical help. The doctor with the mission, Elkana Dawacha, told VOA what he saw. He said the Pearls' situation is deplorable and action must be taken urgently to save them. He described their living conditions as appalling. He said 40 people in the group died between April and December. Aid agencies say that figure includes 13 children. They say it's a far higher mortality rate than in the surrounding community, where only one death of a child was reported in the same period. The main causes of mortality among the children have been malaria and malnutrition, says Ndawacha. Many of the children, he says, display typical signs of protein deficiency, badly swollen feet, cheeks and eyelids, and emaciated bodies. He adds that the Archbishop spoke with the community's leaders who said the Pearl want to leave Yaloke and go to Cameroon, where they will be accepted and will be able to earn their living. The team evacuated one Pearl family with a very sick child to Bangui. En route, they were stopped at a checkpoint by anti-Balaka, who threatened to murder the entire family. Archbishop Diodone Nzapailanga and his team protected the Pearl family from attack, and the convoy managed to continue. The UN Refugee Agency also recently sent a mission to Yaloke, the second time UNHCR has visited the Pearl community there since August. On both visits, UNHCR found that more than 90% of the Pearls wanted to leave the country and were asking for an escort so they could do so safely. Human Rights Watch said in a report earlier this month that the government and the UN peacekeeping mission have a policy of not supporting evacuations of Muslims from the west of the CAR. A spokesperson for UNHCR told VOA it has been advocating for the relocation of the Pearl community from Yaloke for the past 4 months. Asked if UNHCR had made this call publicly, the spokesperson said, maybe not publicly, but within the humanitarian community. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Three Al Jazeera journalists, marking 1 year since they were arrested in Egypt on charges of supporting the banned Muslim Brotherhood, as they look towards a court date today, Thursday, to appeal their case. Australian Peter Christie and Egyptian Canadian Mohamed Fahmy are in prison on 7-year sentences, while their Egyptian colleague
Bahir Mohammed is serving a 10-year sentence. Christie's brother, Michael, told reporters today that the family has to be hopeful the court appeal will lead to the journalist's release. Egyptian President Mohamed Fatah El-Sisi said, after the journalists were convicted in July, that the decision must be respected and he would not interfere. Al Jazeera has insisted its workers were simply doing their jobs, reporting the news, and the news agency called the verdict against them shocking. Egyptian authorities say the country's sagging tourism industry is bouncing back. But as resorts and historical sites enjoy the business, analysts say continued insecurity make the sector in Egypt volatile and not profitable enough to fix the country's economy. Heather Murdoch has more from the Egyptian resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh.
On the shores and under the water of this resort town in the Sinai Peninsula, tourists see none of the insecurity the region is known best for in the news. Egyptian officials say they hope by next year to return the tourism industry to its pre-2011 glory, when the industry pulled in more than $12 billion in a year. Egyptian tourism minister Hisham Zazu says the hope and the challenge is to be able to report a significant restoration of the sector in the first part of next year. But analysts say this challenge is considerable because the industry relies on international public perception of safety in Egypt at a time of continued unrest. Lebanese American University political science professor Sami Baradi calls for economic diversity.
Tourism is a very important but volatile sector. So you cannot pin your economic strategy on a sector that one or two bombings or one or two basically assassinations may impact adversely.
For Egypt to alleviate widespread crushing poverty, he says, the country needs to invest in industry and export goods. But unlike the export business, he adds, Egypt's tourism industry already has the infrastructure and the expertise in place.
So we have to bear in mind all the investments that have been done in the tourism sector, all the jobs in Egypt that are tied to tourism. And, you know, the government cannot but give high priority to this sector.
But economists say even if the government succeeds in convincing visitors to once again crowd into its cities and on its shores, the country will still need to rely heavily on foreign aid to keep afloat after 3 years of political turmoil that collapsed two Egyptian governments. Marwan Iskander is a senior economist with Bank Faron and Chiha in Lebanon.
It's not enough to help Egypt to take off because the events that took place from 2011 till 2013 had hindered the growth of the economy significantly.
Protests and clashes continue in Egypt, threatening to dial back some of the recent successes in the tourism industry. On the other hand, Iskander says new markets are opening up with a large increase in Russian tourists in Egypt in recent years. And tour guides here say despite the insecurity, they, like the iconic Nile River, will endure indefinitely. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt.
Recent studies indicate Africa's little-known country of Burundi is the hungriest place on earth. War, poverty, and overpopulation have left up to two-thirds of the residents with chronic food shortages, affecting people's growth physically and professionally. Rising demands for scarce resources pose serious problems for Burundi's stability. Hannah McNeish reports from Ngozi province in the north on the methods charities are using to fight the war on hunger.
Along many of the hillsides in Burundi's northern Ngozi province, rows of workers are digging and planting to try and stop fertile soils from sliding away in what is considered the hungriest place on earth. The United Nations World Food Programme's Cash for Assets scheme is currently paying more than 5,700 local farmers to work other people's lands after years of trying and failing to beat hunger by toiling their own. Farmers like 50-year-old Matthias Bukuru say that the $1.25 wage he's paid is a fortune compared to the self-enforced slavery he used to put himself through and still go hungry. He says the worst job he had was farming for someone and being paid 12 cents a day, which would only buy him a small basket of sweet potatoes that couldn't even feed his family. Studies by the International Food Policy Research Institute, a malnutrition watchdog, places Burundi last in 79 countries surveyed on food and poverty issues. A 12-year civil war that ended in 2005 left much fertile land fallow for too long or repossessed, while overpopulation has increased the pressure on food production. Bukuru and many others whose outsized clothes make them appear like teenagers say that they returned home after years in exile to infertile land and had no money to regenerate it. Jean-Dominique Masumbuko, agricultural coordinator for Christian charity World Vision, says that the signs of hunger and poverty are literally written on the faces of the people who sign up for the project.
He
says their hunger is visible and that you can see that these people have no strength, that in their faces there are signs that they haven't had enough to eat. He says another clue is that they appear bloodless, like they're almost dry. At a nearby clinic, wailing babies, sullen children and skinny mothers lined the benches. Some have children already enrolled in a WFP feeding program for chronically underweight children and breastfeeding mothers. One woman, Pascaline Minani, has a six-year-old son in the program but walked 5 kilometers here with her baby to see if she could get supplements to ensure this one won't be chronically hungry from birth as she breastfeeds. Sadly, Minani's measurements show that she's not quite thin enough in an area where food aid plugs the gap between the majority who are moderately hungry and the 10% who fall into a severe category and receive hospital treatment. Minani tells an all-too-familiar tale of not having enough land to cultivate and of disease that this year has wiped out her green beans and cassava, a tasteless but stomach-filling staple crop. Her only hope is for a small harvest of potatoes. Her only wish is to feed her children once a day, and if there's enough, herself, in a place where hunger occupies the minds of those with constantly empty bellies. She says she can't stop thinking about food, and that when she's hungry, she tries to get something, but she often doesn't and doesn't feel right. But she just drinks water or stays hungry, as there's no other choice. She says she can't even find the words to explain what living like this is like. WFP says that recent studies show that feeding and agricultural programs have reduced malnutrition rates nationwide from 58 to 49%, and that Burundi's government is eager to eradicate hunger. But in a country where land officials say that disputes over a few meters of turf are turning deadlier and the population is booming, the war on hunger is far from won. Hannah McNeish for VOA in Ngozi, Burundi.
This is African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Lenor Mudu, please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions.
Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America, and here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. A senior Al-Shabaab member has surrendered to government and African Union troops in Gedo, Somalia. And Cameroon says Boko Haram has taken a number of young girls from its border villages for forced marriages to its fighters. Coming up, music from Rwanda, and in our feature segment, what to do with elephants and hippos destroying farms, plantations, and crops outside their protected habitat in Cameroon. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young. Hello, Sonny.
Seasonal sporty greetings, Yehiz.
Sonny, I understand the Nations Cup football tops your sports report.
Yehiz, the countdown is on for the kickoff of the 30th edition of the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Equatorial Guinea. We're now 19 days away to the opening match between Congo Brazzaville and host Equatorial Guinea in Bata. Joining us now with a big package of Nations Cup news is the VOA's Nightline Africa sportsman, Shagun Dot on the spot, Adeyemi.
Good evening, Africa. The 16 finalists are making their final preparations for the football extravaganza. Within the past few days, many teams have released the names of their provisional squads. Tunisian coach Georges Leekens has called up 27 players, out of which 23 will make the final list, which must be sent to the African Soccer's governing body, CAF, by January 7th, 10 days before the tournament kicks off. The shortlisted players will train in Tunisia from January 2nd to 12th. They will also play a friendly match with Algeria on January 11th at the Rade Stadium near Tunis. The Carthage Eagles, as the Tunisian team is known, will then travel to Libreville, Gabon, on January 12th for the second round of preparation match against Mali before flying the next day to Bata, Equatorial Guinea, which will be their base during the tournament. For first round action, Tunisia is in Group B with Cape Verde, Zambia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DR Congo. Congo coach Claude Leroy has also named the 26-member provisional squad that includes France-born defender Christopher Mabulo. The Bastia defender finally rescinded his decision to play for France. The 24-year-old made the squad alongside Belgium-based defensive duo Scott Bistindo of Anderlecht and Jordan Masengo of Mons. The Red Devils of Congo are expected to begin preparations on January 2nd in Brazzaville. 8 days later, they will travel to Senegal for a friendly against Cape Verde before heading back to Brazzaville on January 13th to wrap up for the tournament. Three players will be dropped from the final squad for the January 17th to February 8th, 2015 championship. The Congolese are in Group A with host Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and Burkina Faso. They will face the host nation in the opening match of the tournament on January 17th in Bata. Meanwhile, Ghana coach Avram Grant has also named a 31-man provisional squad for the Nations Cup. Four uncapped players, Enoch Adu-Kofi and Ibrahim Moro, who both play in Sweden, as well as Denmark-based Daniel Amate and Kwesi Appiah, who is based in England, are in the team. The Black Stars are in Group C with Algeria, South Africa, and Senegal. Ghana made it to the quarterfinals at the last four Nations Cup tournaments. Burkina Faso has also named a 24-member provisional squad that includes brothers Alain and Bertrand Traoré. The two brothers played for Burkina Faso at the 2012 edition of the Nations Cup, which was co-hosted by Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. Burkina Faso is expected to travel to South Africa early in the new year to commence preparations for the tournament. The team will play two friendlies against Swaziland and Botswana before traveling to Bata for the finals. Burkina Faso finished runner-up to Nigeria at the 2013 Nations Cup in South Africa. It is in Group A of the 2015 finals with host Equatorial Guinea, Congo, and Gabon. Another West African team, Senegal, has named a squad that includes striker Papiss Cissé, but a surprise omission from coach Alain Juré's team is Demba Ba, who has scored 16 goals for his Turkish club so far this season. Senegal is in Group C with Algeria, Ghana, and South Africa. The Teranga Lions of Senegal will open their training in the capital city of Dakar on January 2nd and then travel to Morocco 5 days later for more preparations. And Cameroon's preliminary 24-member squad has excluded midfielder Alex Song. Song has not featured for his country since he was sent off in the match against Croatia at the 2014 FIFA World Cup. Cameroon opens preparations at home early January before traveling to Gabon for more training. The Indomitable Lions are due in Malabo a day before the opening of the Nations Cup. Well, one team that has already named the final 23-member squad is Cape Verde. Portuguese coach Rui Agua's squad is made up of entirely overseas-based players. The 2015 squad includes 12 players who were part of the team that reached the quarterfinals in South Africa in 2013. The Blue Sharks will be preparing in Portugal ahead of the finals. They will play friendlies against host Equatorial Guinea, who are also preparing in Portugal, a Portuguese club, as well as Congo. Talking about preparations for the 2015 Nations Cup, Guinea is due to prepare in Morocco for the tournament. Let's recall that Guinea also played its home Nations Cup qualifiers in Morocco after being banned from hosting matches due to the outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus. The Sili National of Guinea is in Group D with Cameroon, Ivory Coast, and Mali. In other news, Ivory Coast midfielder Yaya Toure moved closer to a record fourth consecutive African Footballer of the Year title on Friday when he was included in a three-man shortlist. Gabon striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Nigerian goalkeeper Vincent Nyama are the other contenders for the most prestigious African Football Individual Award. Toure plays for reigning English Premier League champion Manchester City, Aubameyang for German club Borussia Dortmund, and Nyama for French outfit Lille. National coaches in Africa will vote to decide the winner, who will be announced on January 8, 2015 here in Lagos. Cameroon striker Samuel Eto'o has won the award four times, but only three of his titles were consecutive. The Africa-based Footballer of the Year award rests between Elhadi Balamiri and Akram Janit, both of Fonton Setif of Algeria, as well as Famim Mubele from DR Congo. Shortlists were also announced for the Women's Player of the Year, Youth Player of the Year, Most Promising Talent, Coach of the Year, National Team of the Year, Women's National Team of the Year, Club of the Year, Football Leader of the Year, and the African Legend Award. Finally, this good news for former football star George Weah of Liberia. Remember him? He's the only African player to have won FIFA's World Player of the Year, and that was in 1995. He's also a three-time winner of the African Footballer of the Year Award. Well, he has now won a seat in the Liberian Senate. The election to fill 15 of the 30 seats in the Senate were held on Saturday. In the most hotly contested race for the Montserrado Senate seat around the capital city of Monrovia, the former soccer star and 2005 losing presidential candidate faced off against Robert Salif, the son of the president, and he won with a landslide. Congratulations to George Weah. Here is wishing all our listeners a happy new year. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
Africa, Mama Africa, we must all rise, sing together to fight Ebola. We are Project Ebola.
We live in a world, my people,
full of uncertainties, no security, everything be possible. It could be your mama, your papa, brother, your sister. Let's start together to fight this deadly disease now. What kind of world we live in? Full of uncertainties, no security, everything be possible. It could be your mother, your father, even your sister. Let's start together to fight this deadly disease now. From Liberia to Nigeria,
from Guinea to Sierra Leone, take precaution.
Mama Africa, it could be your mama, your brother, sister, your father.
Ebola virus named after a river in Congo, where the disease was first discovered in 1977. It spread through direct contact with the blood of an infected person, through contact with needles and other infected objects of persons, and also contact with infected animals, possibly by eating infected meat. Symptoms of Ebola include fever, headache, joints and muscle pain, followed by vomiting and severe diarrhea, rashes, internal and external bleeding. Ebola has no cure. Infected person must be isolated, or infection may spread to others. If you know anyone exhibiting the Ebola symptoms, do not wait. Ensure that person is taken to the nearest hospital for tests to be done. So let us all take action now. Africa.
From Liberia to Nigeria.
From Guinea to Sierra Leone. Take precaution. Be safe. It could be your mama, papa, brother or sister. Take precaution. Be safe. God bless Africa. Africa. We are project.
Thank you, George Weah, and congratulations again on winning that Liberian Senate seat. I know George Weah was hoping his beloved Lone Stars of Liberia would qualify for Equatorial Guinea 2015, the African Championship, but that did not happen. In fact, the last time Liberia made it to the African Championship was 2002. In Mali. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhee.
Thank you, Sonny, and listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, what to do when elephants and hippos destroy farms, plantations, and crops outside their protected habitat in Cameroon. And next, Ugandan soldiers providing help in South Sudan. But first, some music. Here is Miss Jojo of Rwanda with Sinkabangwe.
Kutandukana nari nziko kwari bwo bona bangiye kubaho ngo niryavira nkabona ni
mapfu yarije wabikoze ariko sinakwibagiwe zarinda mfa zarinda mfa bikimbabaza natekerezaga
Jojo Fruanda with Sinkabangwe. Elephants and hippos are destroying farms, plantations, and crops outside their protected habitat in the Kalafu Park in northern Cameroon. Government officials say several people have been killed by the large mammals. But authorities have joined wildlife organizations in warning against killing the animals, which are protected species. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more.
Villagers in far north Cameroon say within the past 3 months, hundreds of elephants and hippopotamuses have caused enormous damage to their farms and destroyed their villages. Ledu Amadu of Bugai village says he lost all of his crops to the animals.
Ils ont mangé le niébé, le fonion, le jeune sorgho qu'on vient de planter.
He says the elephants and hippopotamuses have destroyed all of his sorghum and onions and continue to attack people in their villages. He says no day goes by without the elephants destroying property in at least 5 villages in his area. The animals are leaving the overcrowded 4,000-hectare Kalfu Wildlife Park for greener pastures. Nkwenti Simon Doe, who is the most senior administrative official in the area, says increased population pressure has transformed parts of the park to farms and villages, putting pressure on natural resources. He says the elephants and hippopotamuses from Gere Lake near the park have already killed several people.
Ces mesures se traduisent par des battues administratives de 3 hippopotames, dont 2.
He says wildlife officials have killed 3 hippopotamuses that went on the rampage and adds that he is calling on the population not to take the law into their hands by killing the animals because they will have enormous social and economic benefits if they help to protect the gigantic animals. Alexander Brescher of the World Wildlife Fund for Nature says if government officials and the people whose property is destroyed continue killing the animals, Cameroon, which has already lost 60% of its elephants, may lose everything in the near future.
Cameroon and the wider Congo Basin, it's one of the world's natural treasures. It's the second largest rainforest in the world. And we are losing our big mammals, our great emblematic mammals like the elephants. The forest elephants, the population has dropped by 60% over the last 10 years. We need the message to be sent. Stop killing the elephants. Otherwise, in 10, 20 years, might not be able to see wild elephants in the forest.
Sonny Koke of the non-governmental organization Trade Response Assessment and Priority Setting, TRAPS, says allegations that international organizations prefer protecting the animals to attending to the needs of the population are unfounded.
Well, you know, there's always this misconception that structures, organizations, or even some government agencies are more interested in animals than people. Of course not. We are talking of global resources. Maybe in the next 20 years, we will not have elephants in Cameroon. So how are we going to act on that? Maybe in the next 10 years, we will not have lions in Cameroon. Black rhinoceros are virtually extinct in Cameroon. So that's what we are talking about. So if nothing is being done, we are going to lose all those resources.
Wildlife organizations have been strongly urging Cameroon to adopt a zero-tolerance policy on the killing of animals to prevent their possible extinction. Last year, international and Cameroonian wildlife organizations said almost 12,000 elephants in Central African countries had been slaughtered since 2004 and stated that if current trends continue, elephants will go extinct. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In the Sudanese state of South Kordofan, the number of amputees as a result of civil war is in the thousands, but a few have access to sufficient medical help. Adam Bales recently visited the area. He says a small team of Ugandan doctors has been providing remote help producing new prosthetic limbs for those in need.
In Sudan's Nuba Mountains, civilians are trapped in the middle of a conflict. Government forces have staged thousands of aerial attacks since 2011. Mother of Mercy Hospital is the only fully functional medical facility in the Nuba Mountains. Wards are overcrowded. Beds line corridors, transforming them into makeshift wards. 9-year-old Rob Mohammed was injured in an aerial attack and lost his right leg. But today, he is able to walk again. Just this morning, he was given a new prosthetic leg, part of a program run by a team of Ugandan doctors. Rave has already made drastic improvements, walking without the aid of a crutch for the first time in almost a year. Prosthetic technician Simon Peter says Rave's parents were away when the bomb fell on his house.
So when the bomb, these people released the bomb, they got him inside the house and he cut off the right leg.
Peter says most victims in the Nuba Mountains are middle-aged men.
35 to 40. And these are active people. I think they meet problems as they go to look for food for their families sometimes. You know, as a man, and most of them are men, they try to defend their families. As in a process of defending a family, they meet sometimes maybe gunshots or landmines or whatever.
When Reg was injured, it took his parents hours to reach the hospital. Many people have to travel as far as 200 kilometres to receive treatment. This can take days and mean the difference between life and death. The project works to get help to those in the most remote areas. With no facilities to produce prosthetic limbs inside the region, doctors take a cast and limbs are produced outside the country. These are some of the limbs they have brought to fit patients who were measured last year. An estimated 50,000 people are disabled as a result of the conflict in Sudan. South Kordofan's deputy governor, Suleiman Jaban, says most of them were hurt in bombings.
Daily basis, If you're not bombing here, they're bombing in other areas. And we get the report, the Lamy Mazalan is continuously bombing now, all these days in bombing, killing civilian, injured civilian, and burning their houses and burning their crops.
In South Kordofan, hundreds of children like Rabe are under constant threat from attacks. hiding in caves with their families. Many children have spent their whole lives living in war. For now, Rabi is going back to his village, far from the hospital, one of many to face a difficult future. Adam Bales for VOA News, Gidel, Sudan.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation formally announced that the government of North Korea is responsible for the cyber attack that took place against Sony Pictures Entertainment. The company had been set to release a controversial satirical film featuring a plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The attack destroyed systems and stole large quantities of personal and commercial data, said the FBI in a statement. A group calling itself the Guardians of Peace claimed responsibility and subsequently issued threats against Sony Pictures Entertainment, its employees, and theaters that distribute its movies. After an investigation in collaboration with other U.S. agencies, the FBI said it had evidence that the North Korean government was responsible for the cyber attack and threats. At a press conference, President Barack Obama pledged the United States would respond to North Korea's actions proportionally and in a place and time and manner that we choose. In a written statement, Secretary of State John Kerry condemned North Korea, calling its behavior a brazen attempt to suppress free speech and stifle the creative expression of artists beyond the border of its own country. Mr. Kerry noted that freedom of expression is at the center of American values. We're a country where artists openly mock and criticize the powerful, including our own government. We don't always like what they say about us or about others, and sometimes we're even deeply offended. But those offenses have always taken a backseat to freedom of expression. Threats in cyberspace pose one of the greatest national security challenges to the United States, said Secretary of State Kerry, and North Korea's actions are well beyond the bounds of acceptable state behavior in cyberspace. This provocative and unprecedented attack and subsequent threats only strengthen our resolve to continue to work with partners around the world to strengthen cybersecurity, promote norms of acceptable state behavior, uphold freedom of expression, and ensure that the Internet remains open, interoperable, secure, and reliable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOA Africa presents a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control.
Many Ebola patients who are treated in hospital will survive and recover. Ebola is a serious disease, but when people have recovered, the doctors test them, and when the disease is all gone, they are discharged. The discharged patients cannot transmit Ebola. The virus has left their bodies, and they cannot pass Ebola to anyone. Not their children, their other family members, people sitting next to them in the taxi or bus. Partners, however, must abstain or always use a condom for sex for 3 months after discharge from the health center. And remember, with the right information and together with our healthcare workers, we can protect ourselves from Ebola.
That was a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, brought to you by VOA Africa.